waiver for SoCal High School is actually for Santa Cruz High School. There was a C left out. There was one other small change, Nancy.
It was a date, and it was just an inconsequential date, but there was a date change on an item. They were just two typos that were corrected.
Okay, great. And superintendent's remarks?
None before public comment.
Okay, are there members of the public that would like to speak on matters not on the agenda? The board would like to thank members of the public and know that we value your input, but we are prohibited from commenting due to legal constraints of the Brown Act.
Do you want me to use the microphone, or can I just...
You know, turn the mic on. There are people behind you who have trouble hearing, not so much the board.
And there are people ahead of you who have trouble hearing.
What do we got here?
Just push the button up, see the button right there in the middle? There you go. And then just begin talking, and it will come on. And it'll come on as you continue to talk.
Good evening. My name is Julie Case. I'm a PE teacher at Harvard High School, and I'm here to try to encourage the board to continue to allow shared teacher contracts for certificated staff. I am a veteran teacher of over 30 years. I am currently in my second year of the Willie Brown Act, and I'd just like to share with you last year I was fortunate enough to have a shared contract. I believe it was a win-win situation for everybody involved. The new teacher that came on that I found, she was able to get her foot in the door. Another teacher at Harvard High was able to utilize one of my sections of PE, and he remained full-time. The district benefited financially with the difference of pay skill between a veteran teacher and a teacher at the lower end. And then most importantly, I truly believe that students benefited from having two teachers. I had approximately 160 students last year, and the gal who was my team teacher, she came in 3 weeks before we were to pass the baton, and she observed me teaching for a week. The second week before she was to teach, we team taught together, and then the last week before she was to take over, she taught, and I came in and dropped in on her. So there was a smooth transition. Students knew her. But the biggest benefit for students, I believe, was that they were... they had the opportunity to have teachers that were teaching to their strengths. Maida and I divided the PE sections and the units that were to be taught. She grabbed the ones that she had the most knowledge and strengths with, and I did the same. And so students benefited in that manner. And then, to a great surprise, I came back this year and I had students come up to me and say, hey, you know, we really missed you, but we really liked Miss Hill, too. She was an awesome teacher. And I think everybody involved benefited from that. And I really hope to encourage you to continue allowing those shared contracts on a case-by-case basis. The other thing in the last closing seconds here, it was brought to my attention that there's data supporting that it's not good for kids to have two teachers, and I'm here to tell you it was an amazing situation for 160 students last year at Harbor High to have two teachers. So if you want to come to Harbor High and poll some of my students, I know that they enjoyed having two teachers teaching them throughout the year. Anyway, thanks for your time and consideration on this matter. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Helene Balaban. I want to just make a brief comment about what was just said as the Bayview rep, because the Bayview teachers feel strongly about shared contracts and reduced teacher workload as well. And they're currently in the process of crafting a letter to you that is coming. But that's not why I came to speak tonight. I came to speak tonight as a member of the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee. And I'd like to just read a motion that was passed at our last meeting, and then I'm going to just say a few items of background from my perspective on it. So the motion, though the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee is not formally charged with making spending recommendations, the need for a dedicated, benefited textbook clerk at the secondary schools has become abundantly clear to us. We urge the board to reinstate these positions in order to maintain the integrity of the library program. And my sense as the background of where this came from is as a member of the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee for quite a long time, the library representatives have been sharing their concerns and their frustrations with increased responsibilities and decreased staffing. And it just seemed like this was the time to bring this to the board so that as you do your deliberations on district-wide budget, program, and staffing needs, that this is a matter that really is on the table that you consider. And I wanted to say just one more thing, that I know the librarians are here, because since we made this motion, it's come to my attention that the librarians have some other ideas of some alternatives that would help alleviate the problems that we see in the libraries. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to them.
Hi, I'm Shannon Green, and I'm the teacher librarian at Barber High. And I'd like to thank Elaine and the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee, of which I'm a member, for bringing this issue to the board tonight. And I'd also like to take just a second and recognize the incredible commitment of this board and previous boards in Santa Cruz, the cabinet, and our greater Santa Cruz community, keeping credentialed teacher librarians in our schools. I know in the past few years it's been really unique in the state of California, and we do recognize and appreciate that. I'd also like to acknowledge the personal efforts of many people in this room for passing and promoting and renewing our parcel tax measures, which do pay for our teacher librarians. And on behalf of all of us, thank you so much for that. Although the PTOC, Parcel Tax Oversight Committee, recommended specifically adding a textbook clerk position, the high school teacher librarians, with the support of the other grade levels, would ask the board to consider adding hours and benefits to our existing library media assistants. We have a little handout, and obviously this isn't an official presentation, but we would like to touch on a couple of points, issues that come up because we don't have adequate clerical support. One is that there's no district-wide system for tracking textbooks and lost books. I know at Harbor in 2015 in August, we had $24,000 of outstanding lost books on Infinite Campus bills. So it's a significant amount of revenue that's on the table. We also, in terms of clerical hours and duties spent on textbook administration at Harbor, my library media assistant and I tracked it last spring. We averaged it with the weeks where we do only textbooks, and we figured out it comes to about 30 hours a week between the two of us, myself and my library assistant, who's currently 17 and a half hours per week that we spend on textbooks. So obviously that impacts my ability to build a fully functional library program and services, and we'd ask the board a couple other points.
Another issue that we have found kind of arises is from part-time library media assistants. The teacher librarian does not have the time to deal with, to be a literary resource for all kinds of students. So many students have literary access at home, they have access to different opportunities, they can go to bookstores, things like that, they have computer access at home, and other students do not. So the teacher librarian is a really important literary resource for all of our students, and especially students that don't have access at home. Also, accuracy in bookkeeping. Some students are charged for books that they have returned, and some students are not charged for lost books. So as it stands now with a textbook clerk that works part-time, they're not able to do all of the work, and it's kind of disconnected from the library in a lot of ways. Every high school has a different situation. An example is Santa Cruz High, and sometimes students leave their books on the cart in the hallway when the textbook room is not open. So you can imagine what might happen from there. human resource challenges, we have experienced a high turnover in staff since library assistants were made part-time. And because they are not benefited, it's hard for us to retain highly qualified, trained library assistants. It takes a lot of training to be a library assistant. There are a lot of different details and parts of the job, a lot of computer programming, but using our library catalog takes a lot of training and understanding, in addition to the textbook aspect. So at Soquel High, they had 6 library media assistants in 7 years.
We've presented to you before, and so I know that you're fairly clear about what the role of the teacher librarian is, but I just wanted to kind of bullet point some of the roles that we play on campus that can be more fully realized with adequate administrative support. We are the teachers. We're credentialed both in education as well as in library and media. We're instructional partners. We're reading motivators. We're staff developers. We're information specialists. We're curators. We're collection managers, we're program administrators, we're community builders, and we're technology coordinators. All of this in addition to the regular administrative duties that take place in the library on a daily basis. At the high school, like Shannon mentioned, we have 17 and a half hours of administrative support. So we spend a significant portion of our time performing administrative duties and not realizing the potential of these other roles that we could be playing. With the support of a fully trained, experienced, and empowered library and media assistant, teacher librarians can focus fully on student achievement, instruction, learning environments, creating places that students want to be, fully realizing the use of our learning resources, both the ones that are in-house as well as the ones that are online, and performing duties and being fully functioning members of a library team, including technology, site and district leadership, and community outreach. Thank you very much for your consideration on this issue. We really appreciate you hearing from us again. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, if you want more, you can come back for our day to more formal presentation.
I'm Michelle Morton. I'm the instructional librarian at Cabrillo College. And I came just to talk about the importance of library instruction at the high school level. When students arrive in college, I see students with a wide range of experience doing research. Some have had a chance to do many different research projects. Some have never been inside a library or heard of a database or citation. All of those students will be expected to do extensive research in most of their classes once they get to college. They do it in, at Cabrillo, we do it in their first semester, in their first year English class, and then learning how to do research in their major and the discipline. I see that students that had experience doing research really have a leg up in this process, and conversely, students that don't are struggling to play catch up. And that's another thing that's added to what they have to do before they can even get started, and it really impacts their success. I would love to see more students have more opportunities to do research in high school, and not just AP and honor students, but all students. I'd like to see library instruction integrated across the curriculum, and for ELD students and for students at all levels. Doing instruction takes time for all teachers. You have to plan, you have time, you need time to teach. But for librarians, they also need to collaborate with the teachers they're working with to support the work they're doing in the classroom. For that, in library instruction to be effective, they need time to plan and collaborate with those teachers. Thank you. And I hope that, I really believe that investing in teacher librarians has an impact across the curriculum and for all students and will really help them be successful in college. Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay, Superintendent.
Wait a second, we have one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Washington. and a very good close friend of mine passed away January 3rd. And his name was Jerry O'Shea, and his wife Eileen was a longtime employee of this particular school district. And I would ask that you keep your thoughts and your prayers out for the family of Jerry O'Shea. I think some of you knew Eileen very well. And Jerry was one of my McDonald buddies and who helped us solve so many problems in this world, only to come back and solve them again the next morning. So thank you so much for your thoughts and prayers.
Thank you.
Good evening. This last week, we faced what feels like is a weekly issue with facilities. We had a gas line break at Santa Cruz High School. PG&E helped to identify exactly where it was, and our facilities team working in the storm last week to fix the leak in front of the math building. During that process, another leak was found in the line between the math building and the library, and this week the facilities team has been working to get that corrected. It is timely that we are beginning our facility master plan community meetings because our buildings are aging and there are significant needs to be met to ensure that we have great spaces for our kids to learn in. We have wonderful teachers and librarians and teaching assistants and all kinds of people making sure that our kids have wonderful experiences in our schools, and we have incredible teams to work on our buildings, but we're getting to that place where Band-Aids and duct tapes over many years isn't holding things together. So we need to make a plan. These are community meetings where people can come weigh in. Jim is in the process with his team of getting information out. We're going to have something in the newspaper to allow the community to know, neighbors to know, that these are opportunities to come and weigh in and share ideas with architects who've done a draft plan, and the community will help to weigh in on priorities and needs. The architects, again, will be present for those meetings. And another factor as we look at our facilities master planning is our enrollment projections. And tonight you're going to hear a report on our current enrollment projections over the next 10 years. The report illustrates declining projections over the next decade at each grade span. And this information is going to be critical for us both in our resource and facilities planning as we move forward. And I'll address that further as Jim gets to that report later on this evening. On December 15th, Angela and I were able to have lunch again with Chancellor Blumenthal, Associate Chancellor Ashish Shah. I'm saying it wrong. It's been a long day. We got up at and left for Sacramento very, very early this morning for the governor's May revise study session with school services. Ashish Shahini, Program Director for Teacher Education, Liz Meter, and Faculty Director of Teacher Education, George Bunch. We had an opportunity to talk about professional development for opportunities for our teachers through the School of Education up there. We talked about engaging teachers in research as professionals on the ground. We talked to UCSE also about sharing their research with us to inform our practice, developing ideas together for teacher retention and recruitment. We talked about jointly applying for grants and other potential funding opportunities. And they encouraged us to encourage our teachers to explore their speaker series, but they were afraid for us to advertise it too much because I have a pretty small venue for that. So we also offered that we might be able to provide larger venues if they needed larger venues to have both their student teachers and our teachers join in those speaker events. So that happened right before the holidays, and we look forward to continued conversation and collaboration with them. We also met before the break. Jim and I, since the late summer, have been exploring the possibility of a faculty housing project in Santa Cruz. Part of attracting and retaining the best possible teachers for our students is ensuring that there's available housing.
And we all know that's a challenge in our community. In early fall, we met with Supervisor Coonerty and his staff. They connected us with some different agencies to meet with. That resulted in a phone conference with Mid-Peninsula Housing, who's interested in potentially working with us on a project. We met with the county planning office. We've met with city council members, and we've met with city planning staff, who are all encouraging us as we are doing this investigation into the feasibility of whether we could do something like this as a school district. In December, we met with the CBO in Santa Clara Unified to learn about the housing project that they began in 2000. We learned a lot from them, a lot about what they learned, a lot about what didn't work, what they do differently. And I think it was a really beneficial. Trevor and Jim and I met with him for about an hour, and he offered to continue to give us information as we'd like. Our next step in investigating this possibility will be to meet with Cupertino School District, who was getting texts during closed session from their assistant superintendent as we're trying to set up an opportunity. President of Carrillo College would like to join us, and I think Dorma Baker is going to join us as well. As we're all looking to learn more about how we can support, recruit, and retain teachers in our county. Jim and Trevor and I will be bringing a board presentation at some time later this spring to give you more details about what we've learned and what potential next steps might be. But I just wanted to give you an update of where we were and what our next step. We're trying to arrange a visit in February to Cupertino, and they just announced that they're going to build a apartment complex for staff in their school district. Just before the break, Trustee Schoenig and GSCFT President Barry Christian and SCCCE President Robert Chakanaka and Assistant Superintendent Parks and I attended a conference as part of the state-sponsored labor management initiative. The conference was focused on effective collaboration. And it was some opportunity for good conversation, but I think we all agree that they talked at us too much and there was a lot more that we wanted to talk about together. And we're going to continue with more local meetings of that group, and I'm also invited the AMA presidents, the two principals that represent AMA as co-presidents, to join us for a meeting in February. And the state is going to be sponsoring more convenings to support effective collaboration within districts in March, and we look forward to sending representatives to that as well as we move forward and continue our conversations and collaboration. On Monday, there was a COE budget workshop that I know a few of you attended, an opportunity to hear from capital advisors. We went to a little bit longer and more in-depth workshop on the governor's budget proposal this morning in Sacramento, and Robert Chakanaka was able to attend with us. Some of the key points of the governor's proposed budget right now include the governor's continuing with one-time fund allocations. So this is an opportunity for him to put out money, but it's just for one time. This initial proposal is $214 per ADA, which would be just a little over $1 million in one-time revenues for the district. The cost of living increase that's been proposed is 0.47%, less than 0.5% cost of living increase. The budget includes increases to state revenues rainy day fund, and the governor is going to be asking the legislature to add an extra $2 billion to the rainy day fund this year. California now is 41st in the nation for state funding for education, and per pupil spending, we rank 46th. So although there has been more money put into education, we still are not back to 2007-8 levels of funding. We won't ever see the spending pattern of 2007-2008 because of our new responsibilities to cover STRS and PERS retirement costs. So these increased required expenditures, for example, of STRS and PERS, and there's some other requirements around sick leave and other things that are not going to be covered by the COLA, and they're going to require us to use the new LCFF-based resources to meet those needs. So although it was good news, we're not going to see the a lot of new revenue, but it's definitely good to know we're not having to be planning for cuts or reductions. given this budget, but we may see some reductions in our supplemental allocation depending on what our ADA or actual enrollment shows up as next year. So that's going to be something we need to consider too. As we decline in enrollment, it has an impact on the actual numbers, the revenue that comes in. So those are, as those formulas are available to us, Jim and his team will be working to get that information to us as quickly as possible to inform our budget planning, to inform our LCAP process, all of those things. Thank you.
And now we have our student reports.
Well, Happy New Year's to the board. It's the first meeting back. Everyone is back at school after winter break. And of course, the usual questions of why are finals after break have come back. So everyone's in the last week before finals. The new season of sports is also starting. And a couple teams have played their first couple games. Harbor Spring Musical, directed by Allison's daughter Molly, has been announced as The Little Mermaid. We have winter formal on Saturday, and everyone's looking forward to the multiple extended weekends in February.
Hello, Happy New Year. Santa Cruz High students are also looking at finals in the next week, as well as the seniors among us have, in the home stretch for college deadlines. I think most of the last ones are on the 15th, this Friday, so there's a lot of frantic procrastinating going on. As was mentioned, we had a little facilities-related excitement in the past couple weeks. Not only did we have the two natural gas leaks, which resulted in the main building heating being shut down. I'm not really sure what it says about our heating, but I never noticed the change in temperature in the classrooms. But that's one of the benefits of going to school in a historic building. There was also an issue in our library where the ceiling started leaking and then the ceiling tile fell out completely and missed students and technology and books, which was fortunate, but unfortunate that it was covered in mold. We've also had one of our girls' bathrooms in the main building has been converted to a staff bathroom. I'm told it's in response to a graffiti issue. And the result from that is pretty predictable. There's a lot longer lines in the girls' bathroom, the one remaining girls' bathroom in the main building. There's a lot more graffiti in the one remaining girls' bathroom in the building. And all the like paper towels and soap went out far more frequently. And I know the Rainbow Lions Club in particular was rather concerned about that because they've been pushing for a gender-neutral bathroom to be available to students in the main building, but hopefully they'll make more progress on that in the new year. And as some of you know, I made the mistake of getting sick before break, so I had the fun experience of playing catch-up for the several weeks before break in where still sick, I attend school and have to stay abreast of classwork as well as make up for all the work I've missed. And this is a really difficult thing, not just for myself, but for all the other students I've talked to, especially in the cold and flu season when students who haven't fully recovered from being sick feel pressure to return to class and just so that they can stay ahead of what they're doing on top of their classes, especially their Excel schedule, and then get other students sick, and it's kind of a vicious cycle. Thank you.
Thank you. And board member reports.
I just wanted to announce, I'm sorry, you always start with me, so okay. Just jump in here. The Santa Cruz County School Boards Association is meeting tomorrow at 6:30 at the Soquel Elementary Office of Education, so it's all welcome to attend. That's it.
Is it here?
At the Soquel Elementary.
Did he resend that?
Oh, has it changed since yesterday?
Oh, I'm sorry. Could we just repeat that so I can get it straight?
Santa Cruz County School Boards Association meetings tomorrow at 6:30, and I guess there was an update since I read the email. I'll get back to you.
Okay, thanks.
Patty?
Okay. Well, Happy New Year. Welcome back. In my December report, omitted to report that I had the opportunity to attend the PCS new building christening, and I'd like to acknowledge Board President Pete Rohde and Foundation Leader Tom Morrell for all the work that they did for finding PCS, the beginning of their permanent home, and allowing for all children in our community to have access to an education that they believe in. I also attended on the 12th, just after we finished our board, reports the Santa Cruz campus cleanup and beautification, and this was also attended by Saturday school students, so there were about 20 students along with the PTA, Mr. Copalt, and parents who did quite a bit of work down in the lower lot, and it was really pretty exciting to work with the students. You hear quite a bit from them, and you get a real pulse on what's going on. It was also, from my perspective, community building, because the parents could see and meet other students that their children are around and just sort of hear their perspective as they worked along. They were pretty industrious and got quite a bit done, so that was enjoyable. Saturday school, sometimes I think it, there is a disconnect for the public thinking that these are students who are not the best students, but there are many reasons that lead to Saturday school. Most of it is usually being late from what most of the children had to say, or students, I don't even call them children. I had the pleasure of touring a couple facilities with Mr. Miller, and he had helped me to see some of the greater needs that Ms. Monroe was speaking about, and I'm happy that the district is looking into ways to address these needs and find the funding for our facilities. I attended the Governor Budgets Workshop hosted by the COE and Michael Watkins here as, through the Capital Advisors, and Ms. Monroe had briefly explained pretty much the direction of the governor. So though the general public seems to think that education is doing quite well, the truth of the matter is that we're just inching back to where we were decades ago. I'd like to invite you to Soquel High on Saturday morning from 8 to 11 for the Music Foundation's annual pancake breakfast. It is a fundraiser, and I think anybody who attends will be immensely surprised. It is a showcase of all the students who come together and play music, and it's a wonderful community event, and it helps fundraise for music. And lastly, I would like to acknowledge what our student reps had to say about our finals. It comes to me often, and since my child was in school, that it is very difficult to come back from Christmas, a long Christmas break, to have 1 week of school and then start in for finals. So I'm hoping we can have some conversation about how we can find a solution to that one way or another. Thank you.
Schools Plus met in December to identify the recipients of the 2016 grants. Teachers from Galt, Francis Forte Middle, Mission Hill Middle, Santa Cruz High School, and Soquel High School received grants last year, and I'm anxious to find out who's receiving them this year. The mission of Schools Plus is to promote, support, enhance the quality of education for all students in the community. I think it's a great organization, and that's my report.
Well, I don't have a lot to report because I really vacated on the vacation and my brain. I vacated my brain, so I can't remember what I did, except that I went to Bayview's annual Christmas party, which was just great to get a chance to be there with all the teachers and the PTA and get a sense again of the elementary schools. And I have gone and I'm going to continue to go to the Parcel Tax Committee meetings where I've learned a great deal about the thoughts about how we use the parcel tax, how we think about the parcel tax. We've got a committed group of volunteers for that organization. And then I just wanted to say, Ella, both of the things you said kind of blew my mind. And I thought, one thing I thought about was at the university, I see a lot of people who work at the university. I not work, go to school there. They do work, but. and you know, it is a common practice that when people are ill, that they actually be given an incomplete and a chance to make up their work simply by having it notification that they're ill. And I really noticed a difference because I've also worked with a lot of high school students, especially at Santa Cruz High, with the Excel system, where it's you just feel like you're saying, go on out there and make everybody sick. And while you're at it, have to worry about failing your classes. I think it's something that we ought to actually talk about and think about whether we could have a simple solution. So I'm really appreciative of you bringing it up. Not to mention the bathroom thing, which I'm hoping, Angela, maybe we can look into. Because really, as if we don't have enough trouble with bathrooms. So I just wanted to thank you for bringing up both of those issues. And Chris, I just wanted to tell you thank you for all the work about the housing, and I'm hoping that when we get the presentation, the pros and cons that you learned a lot about, we'll hear about, because I'm already hearing people reading about it in the paper, asking about it in the community, and I want to know as much as possible about the both the pros and the cons of us doing this. So then thank you for all the work you've put into working with the entire community and all the different officials to help this move on.
Jim and Trevor, too, have been really...
And Jim and Trevor. Thank you. Okay, that's all.
Okay, I attended the Harbor High Career Expo last month, right before the break, and I want to commend the counseling staff at Harbor for really pulling off a great event. We shepherded hundreds of kids through, and there were community representatives of different careers. It was really a really nice event. I met with Chris and the elementary parent-teacher organization presidents and had a really nice conversation with them about their common struggles and priorities around mostly fundraising, but also just their goals for their organizations. I also was at the Bayview Teacher Appreciation Breakfast. That was a lot of fun. We had last week the second meeting of the Youth Development Work Group for the Live Oak Santa Cruz Youth Violence Prevention Strategic Initiative. We're zeroing in on core strategies, and hopefully within the couple of months I'll be able to bring back what those are. They're very much in keeping with the goals of our district around how to support youth. I attended the GALT PTO meeting last night and the Budget Perspectives Workshop. And I think that the big message was to have restrained optimism as we look towards the budget. Finally, I'd like to congratulate Deb on her appointment to the Library Advisory Commission. I read about that in the paper this morning. And thank her for her service.
Patty was correct, Nancy. The SCSBuzz meeting, Santa Cruz County School Boards Association, it is here tomorrow night.
Thank you so much.
Great. Okay, now we're going to move on to approval of the minutes. First, for the minutes of the regular meeting on December 9th, 2015. Do we have a motion?
I'm sorry.
Approval of the minutes?
Approval of the minutes for the December 9th meeting. Deb moves approval.
I'll second.
Sheila seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Oppose? Abstain? Excellent. And the approval for the minutes of the annual meeting of the Finance Authority on December 9th also. Do we have a motion?
Approval.
And a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Oppose? Abstain? Okay.
Did you have something?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I missed my window, and I was thinking that we were going the opposite way. I just wanted to point out in my report, and maybe I don't articulate well, that it was a lively pickleball game, and I say pickleball as opposed to wiffle, because the friends have a pickleball court.
I'll make that correction.
And then also, under student reports, I believe that Ella was inviting us to the cleanup. It hadn't happened yet, but the minutes do appear that it had taken place. So just those clarifications. And I'm sorry, I didn't bring those to you earlier.
But we're fine, right?
Do we need,
to read?
With those changes.
Okay. I would just say with the changes, correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, do we need another motion?
Yes.
So, do I have a motion to...
Move to approve.
Okay. And a second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Thank you.
Okay. So now we're going to move on to consent agenda. Is there anything to be pulled from the consent agenda? Do we have a motion to approve?
Move approval.
Okay. Claudia moves approval.
I'll second.
Deb seconds. All in favor?
Oh.
Roll call. Go to the public. Are there comments from the public?
Since it's a consent agenda, it's hard.
Student recommendations.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Do you mind if I just say something about it? On the consent agenda, you saw a lot of CSAs to support the Supplemental Educational Services Program. This is a program that was required under No Child Left Behind, and I'm very, very happy to say that under the reauthorization and the Every Student Succeeds Act, the 10% set-aside that we had to have in Title I for our program improvement schools to have outside vendors serve our students and do intervention with our students will no longer be required next year. So that investment can go back into the certificated and classified staff who can provide those services and interventions and support for our kids and who know them well. And over the years, as we've watched those programs and seen that it has made very, very little difference in student achievement, it's been frustrating, and I have to say it's quite a celebration that with that reauthorization, those funds can then be used by our district and the professionals who work in our district to make a difference for our kids.
So is this the last time?
It's the last time we have to do it.
Excellent. So we have report on closed session actions.
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard information on expulsions 3/15/16 and 6/15/16. The Board of Trustees heard information regarding a liability claim and took action to deny the claim. The Board will return to closed session after this meeting.
Okay, and now we're going to vote on expulsion 3/15/16. Do I have a motion?
I'll move to approve expulsion 3/15/16 through the end of 2015-16 and suspend the enforcement to allow them to attend Grant Supporting Middle School.
Do I have a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain?
I have a question. Can I make an amendment to that? Can we move to remove the name of the school?
Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to include it.
Thank you. Okay. Oh, yes.
Okay. And one abstention. And now we're voting on expulsion 6/15/16.
I move that we approve the expulsion through the end of the 2015-16 school year and suspend the enforcement to allow the student to return to their present high school.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Oppose? Abstain? Okay. Nancy, you got that? Okay, great. So now we're moving on to new business, and we have the audit.
Jim.
Thank you, President Thompson. It is my pleasure to introduce the Santa Cruz City Schools external auditor, our firm is Crowe Horwath, out of the Sacramento area. Here tonight to present the 2014-15 audit is Ms. Jennifer Hall, who we worked with closely after the conclusion of our fiscal year to prepare the report. It was sent into the state. She's here to give me an update of what was presented. Thank you, Ms. Hall.
see you again. I was here last year presenting the audit. I will go over this briefly, and then if you have any questions, feel free to ask. So as you know, the audit includes audit opinions on the actual financial statements themselves, the state compliance and federal compliance. So we opine on all of those. For the financial statements, it was an unmodified opinion, which is what you want to see. And on federal compliance, it was also unmodified. On state compliance, it was qualified due to a couple of findings, which I can refer you to the back of the report. They're related to unduplicated pupil counts and attendance. And then if you go through the report, just point out some sections within the report that I know board members typically like to look at. One is the management discussion analysis, which is towards the beginning, and that gives you a summary of the events of 2014-15. And then it moves to the actual financial statements, the numbers themselves, and includes government-wide, which is the fund financials, which you look at throughout the year, and then adds in the debt and the capital assets. And so that those are two sections of the financial statements. I am happy to report that there were no audit adjustments, so the numbers that you looked at throughout the year were correct, and we didn't find any adjustments regarding those. And again, speaking to the findings, if you turn towards the back, let's see what this is. Starting on page 78 is a summary of the results of the audit, and then 79 starts the findings. So one is, again, we have student body findings, no federal award findings, and then begins the state compliance that I referred to. There is one new item this year related to GASB 68, where you have to report the net pension liability for STRS and PERS. And so you'll see in your financial statements some differences in the numbers in your ending net position because of having to report this liability. So that is, it happened for all government entities, so you're not alone in this, and everyone's financials changed this year because of that. Lastly, I'd like to present to you the required audit communication letter, and it essentially just goes through our responsibilities under the auditing standards. Any new pronouncements, again, discussing GASB 68. Any audit adjustments, again, there were none. And then any situations where there are disagreements or conflicts with management, and there were none. So nothing too exciting to report, but I want to thank Jim and his team in doing a lot of work throughout the year, because when we come in at year end and do the financial audit, it's a lot of requests, a lot of information that we look at, and we appreciate that throughout the year they maintain the records for us, as well as staff at school sites. We go out to the sites and meet with different personnel and their cooperation with the audit. So thank you. Any questions?
Questions from the board? Do we have comments from the public? Jim?
Yeah, just to echo that, thank you, President Thompson. It is a true partnership, and it'd be nice to take a lot of it, but just with my recent entry into the district, we do have a fantastic team both inside all the school sites as well as inside all of the district office to support the piece. And the relationship that we really view with the auditors itself is more of preventive maintenance versus of coming in to really get you, for lack of a better term. And so I think that really has parted itself in the report as far as that. And with the significant changes with the digital school's financial system, having the number of exceptions that we see here, which are somewhat easily to be repaired, we find it to be just a solid year. So thank you.
Excellent. Are there no questions? The recommendation is to accept the audit. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Okay.
Thank you.
And now we have a staff report, the Transportation Department update.
Yes, it's my pleasure, President Thompson, to introduce some valuable key members of our team. I'd like to introduce Mr. Trevor Miller, our facilities maintenance operation transportation director, and immediately to his left as we face them, Mr. Emil Frades, who joined our team late at the end of our fiscal year last year and really has taken upon himself to really be a true a leader within our team and really taken up ways to enhance our transportation department within Santa Cruz City Schools. Without further ado, I'll turn over the presentation portion to these two gentlemen.
Thank you, Jim. Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome back. And before my thunder, I was going to introduce Emil joined us in April of last year. And as you're probably very well aware, we have an incredibly aging fleet. So we've come up with some solutions to this. And so we'll run through this really quick here, where we are and what's next. So I've got to point it in the right direction, I guess. Not going anywhere.
You have another one in the back if you want to try it on.
You want to be my...
I'll be
here. So kind of a general overview to start things here. Basically, the special needs students is the primary client that we have. I mean, those are the kids that we serve most. And there's 106 special needs that obviously... because of IEP, 75 transported daily to 14 different sites. We also have a couple of special out-of-town versions as well. Most of these go to some sort of Santa Cruz CRE program. Use 9 small buses daily, 4 with wheelchair lifts. And that's kind of the minimum we need just to maintain operation. Del Viega schools, 174 students a day, K-5, use a shuttle. They go from Grand Street, from the shuttle, from Grand Street. So 50 in the morning, 75 in the afternoon. Primarily our big buses are used just for athletic activities or field trips or all those sort of special events that occur. So we talked there, we had 51 in 14-15, 66 in 15-16 so far. So as things are turning around and people are seeing light at the end of the tunnel, there's a sort of resurgence of let's go do stuff. And so that's putting stress on a system that's not really able to sustain it right now. Quicker, please. Thank you, ma'am. This sort of lays out the fleet as it stands right now. Probably the most important, there's two really important things to note here. The column that says age and the pink group down the bottom. So the column that says age, that is the age of our fleet as of a few months ago. The average age is 19 years. So it's long in the tooth. Pink section are buses that are no longer working for one reason or another. A couple of them there may be fixed, but we're talking significant amounts of money. And we've been putting a lot of money into these vehicles over the years. As they get older, just like our buildings, they require more and more to go on it. Good job. So the good news about all this, since Abel's come on board, he's been seeking solutions. So he's worked on prioritizing efficient routes with minimum hours, minimum miles, with maximum efficiency for our students, and at the same time seeking a solution to this old fleet, because these buses are expensive. We've talked about this in the past, where are we going to get the money from? How are we going to do this? Well, thanks to the efforts of Emil here, he's discovered that through Monterey Bay Air Pollution Control District, there is a program with old buses. We lay it out here, we're 23 years or older, and lo and behold, that's most of our fleet, are eligible. So the way it sits right now, they have to have current continuous CHP certification. That's really a huge hurdle with a couple of our older buses, and again, thanks to Emil and his team, we've managed to get a couple recertified that, in all honesty, it was really just a hope and a dream just a few weeks ago. So they are now eligible. There's some other criteria there, but basically $165,000 is what the grant is, and the buses are about $166,000 with tax. So we're right there on the cusp. So now we move on. Those are the big buses we were talking about. These are the small ones. This is the fleet that basically the pink aren't eligible for grants as we understand it today. So we're working towards getting clarification, maybe putting some pressure on to modify the grant program a little bit because it's been growing. They haven't had enough people like us applying. So hopefully there may be one or two of those we can pressure over the coming years to get to become eligible. The blue group, will become eligible. As you can see, the grant line at 23 years, we're a few years short. Mm-hmm. And this is where we fall into a little bit of a problem in the immediate means. So with our general education fleet, the larger buses we talked about, the ones that are used from Dollar Theater and for all the athletic events, we have two of them right now that are immediately eligible for this program. So that's good news, because now our sports teams can go over the hill in safety, because that is a major concern right now with the fleet we have. And in just a few years, the other two will become eligible. So we'll have a full fleet of larger buses. As of, you know, just a few months ago, that was an unknown quantity, and here we are with $600,000 to $700,000 worth of potential eligibility. So that's a great thing there. We need a minimum of three buses to service those needs, but we kind of need to always have a backup. And sometimes different events require different seating applications. And so of the four large ones, we're going to have three, probably 84 passengers, is that correct? And then a small one of
72.
But basically, all large buses that can take care of all that. So that's exciting news. And we sort of go to explain which one is which and what bus numbers they are, but that's kind of boring information. So you can read that on your own. Our current needs is obviously we need to replace all those large ones. We talk about two that are eligible immediately, two more coming up in a couple of years. We have to maintain at least 9 working buses on a daily basis, which in the last couple of weeks, we've actually had some issues where that's all we had. So if something else had happened, we would have had some issues in long delays in getting children home. And the last group of individuals you want to interrupt a routine on is some of those special needs kids. So Emil's incredibly conscientious about making sure that doesn't happen. He's done a phenomenal job in rerouting. Just sort of a little side note here. A week and a half ago, anyway, one of our drivers had a heart attack whilst in a bus. The good news is he's home.
He's had a stent and he's recovering well, but that puts us down that drive. So it's been an awful lot of fun.
So
the department's not very big. So you lose one, you lose 10% of the people right there.
So we're dealing with some of those other issues as well, because we have an Asian fleet of bus drivers as well. What we need out of that 9 buses is 5 need to have wheelchair lifts. Again, we don't. All of them, the small buses don't have wheelchair lifts. So if the wrong one breaks down on the wrong day, that also creates problems. So again, we've got to have this minimum 9, and we need some backups just in case. So what we're looking at here is the need to increase the budget for projected repairs. We need to reconfigure one of our buses to be more universally adaptable, so it can be a better spare, so to speak. And the dollar figures are there. Yeah. So, as I mentioned earlier, thanks to the efforts of Emil, we've come with a plan because he's found some solutions to these. What we thought just a few months ago were insurmountable, but there is some light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train coming. We'll probably bring back to you, I don't know which meeting, but soon. We want to formally submit a grant proposal for those 2 buses immediately, the 2 large buses, because they're eligible. We'd like to purchase 2 small buses, so we have a reliable, safe, special needs fleet. That comes with a cost of $145,000. There are alternatives where you can lease purchase and some other things, but the fact of the matter is it's $145,000. That's for 2 buses. Prioritize some repairs, spend a bit more money, get more focused on a few of those vehicles. Reconfigure the bus 18 to give us that better versatility. We want to declare some of those old buses obsolete. We want to get them out of the yard. They're becoming a hazard. If they spring a leak, if something goes wrong, we have an oil spill, a fuel spill, we have to deal with all of that. We are right there by the creek, so it potentially is a kind of a nasty situation that we just need to get rid of them because that's the right thing to do. In 2020-21, we want to submit grant proposals for 2 new small buses to raise that number up. and in 23-24 for the other two live buses. And so we'll be bringing these things back to you for some action, but that's kind of what our plan is right now. And then that's really all I have to say. And would you like to add anything to that? I probably missed a bunch of stuff.
No, it's just that it's interesting. We have 106 students that have on our IEPs transportation. And so the very drones of students that we have. Half of those students are part of the CE programs. And we have them from pre-K all the way up to Cabrillo City College. We go to 14 different school sites. What makes it interesting is, especially in the elementary schools, you have the kindergartners who will go home at a certain time, and then the first and second graders go home later, and then third and fourth graders go home. So you have it's kind of a mix. We have 14 schools all going in the afternoon, so it's an awful lot of fun. My problem is the buses. Since October, I've had 38 failures, and just about every one of the buses that are on our fleet have had failures. What I mean by that is the bus is going down the street, and all of a sudden stops, and then you have to get another bus over there to transfer kids on the sidewalk, in the parking lot. I've had alternators go out, transmissions. We had one bus was going down the street, and all of a sudden the radiator just decided to leak in front of it. It's an old fleet, and we do live by the ocean, and a lot of them have rust. And a couple of buses, I'm pretty sure, will not pass our February inspection, because that's one of the things we look for. And school busing is really important. When you repair a bus, it has to be brought back to its original manufacturing. And it's not like I can go ahead and put, you know, aftermarket parts on the bus. And so when a bus breaks down, I am obligated to bring it back up to its original specs. The buses are in pretty bad shape. What's really unfortunate is that approximately 6 years ago, we had to put particular traps into buses that were over 14,000 pounds. The buses were not spec'd. They weren't built with those. So as a consequence, you're adding an aftermarket, and it's a state-required particulate trap. And we got a grant for that. You might have even seen it about 4 or 5 or 6 years ago. And what that does is it forces back pressure into the engine. And so that's why our newest buses are my greatest problem, so believe it or not. They're only 11 years old, but they've been down to Ford quite a bit, about $15,000 a piece. So one had just recently failed again. Yeah, but it was under warranty. So if we want our children to get to school safely, we really do need to get two small buses to do that. And it will fit very well within our community, because one of the drivers said that our streets are kind of like horse trails that have been covered over with asphalt. It's not like you find it in Silicon Valley or San Jose where everything is crosshatched. They have a lot of trees and a lot of very difficult places we go to. We go door to door with students. So that's why.
So one thing I might add with this grant, as Emil was telling you about particular traps, this grant, one of the goals is to get rid of diesel buses, to eliminate that high particulate content exhaust fumes that our students are exposed to, and of course everybody else on the road is exposed to. So all the new buses will be gasoline powered, so that makes a lot of things simpler and also eliminates all that particular.
That's also where the grant money comes from, to get rid of your diesel buses. So the six buses that are coming online within 6 years, all will be state-of-the-art diesel buses. So that's where we get the money from. It's for our kids.
Okay, thank you. Do we, Jeremy?
Good report, thanks. What's the total cost of our transportation budget per year?
Question. I didn't write that down.
Yes,
Jim?
I have to go back and look it up. Before, when the Tier 3 category went away, there was a separate resource. Now all transportation comes directly out of the general unrestricted fund. But we can definitely allocate out the expenses. So I'll get it out to you tomorrow. The exact amount we have for that.
Okay, Sheila.
Just wanted to clarify for myself. The buses that you, the two small wheelchair buses that you want to purchase, are not grant eligible?
No, they're not. They're not grant eligible. As it is currently, the grant is for those buses that are over 14,000 pounds, and they have to be certified for 5 years, and they have to be over 23 years of age. Those are the big buses. We We also have two smaller ones, but they're heavy. They're over 14,000 pounds. And they will become eligible within 3 to 4 years. Those are buses 19 and 1.
So those are small but heavier.
Those are smaller. What's interesting is that we will get full funding for that when they come up. So we'll actually have two additional small buses for the fleet in 3 to 4 years.
Oh, so those aren't, they're not replacing. You'll get two additional new ones.
What will happen is we have two separate fleets. We have a large fleet and we have a small fleet.
Uh-huh.
A small fleet in 4 to 5 years, we're going to have two new buses through the grant program.
And two new buses, hypothetically, through
for the large bus.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a done deal because we've already got the paperwork on it. So CHP signed off on it. And we worked with the grant. So of the two fleets, the big fleet, we'll have two new buses right away. And then the other two will be replaced within, I think, it's 5 to 6 years, six to 7 years. So I have 400 buses within 7 years on the big side. So we can do field trips, football teams, maybe get all the high schools enough. But for special needs, since the buses are smaller, the granting is at 14,000 pounds greater. We don't have them, we just have the two. And luckily, they are coming up the soonest ones. The earliest ones.
Thank you.
Patty?
My question is more directed to Ms. Monroe on this. So since the monies for transportations are now in general funds, would that allow for the governor's one-time money to address some of these needs? Would that qualify?
What I think we should do is talk about, you know, one-time money is you want to spend on things because you don't want to put one-time money into ongoing costs. So something like this would be appropriate for one-time expenditure, and we're going to need to talk about all of our needs and how we prioritize them and what would be the best funding source. And I think when they bring back the needs, we can talk about what are some potential funding sources that could be tapped.
And are there comments or questions from the public? Okay, thank you very much.
I was meeting with some teachers this last week, and we were talking about the annual seventh grade trips to the universities, and we were talking about working with transportation to get scheduled and how much they appreciated working with Emil and his team and how responsive and how service-oriented they were. And another teacher talked about she had set up a field trip and she thought the bus had been taken care of and was really worried because she realized at the last minute that it wasn't. But she called and she got help and she got it worked out and figured out in the final hours of making that all happen, and just really appreciated the level of service that Emil and his team are providing to the school space.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to move on to the next item, which is the LCAP goals and metrics. And that's for you, Angela.
Thank you, President Thompson. So I appreciate the opportunity to bring back this report. We had a really full agenda December 9th. And Ed Services often dominates the majority of the agenda, so it was our turn to kind of step aside. But with bringing it back this month, our annual goals and metrics update, I'd like to frame this more as the kickoff to our LCAP, to our Local Control Accountability Plan revision cycle. And so what I'll be bringing to you tonight really are three components in one report. The first is looking at our LCAP key priority areas and the ways that those work with our existing goals and metrics. Because we, if anything that we've learned over the past 2 years, we don't want more plans. What we'd like to do is look at how we can take existing plans and see how they work together to create one plan. The second part of this report, I'll share with you examples of those metrics from the 2014-15 year, just to kind of highlight how do those metrics both support our goals and then support the LCAP. And then lastly, share with you some challenges. And sometimes challenges are kind of a cliffhanger. We put it out there and we say, you know, here's a problem. And this is what we're thinking about. But what's exciting about this point in the year is that I'll be sharing with you some challenges and then I'll be able to bring back in March, maybe as early as February, some of the responses to those challenges. So all good going forward. Let's see if this works. Thank you. So I want to begin by introducing the state priorities in the LCAP. And they are grouped in three different areas. And the first one, the conditions of learning, I think it's really appropriate that this follows our transportation report, because we often don't think about those foundational supports that we rely on. So having the structures in place, having good transportation, having solid buildings, having teachers who are credentialed and curriculum that is aligned with our standards, and access for all students, I think of those as the framework or the foundation that, again, if it works well, it's almost invisible, and when it doesn't work well, that's when we pay attention to it. But nonetheless, it's extremely important. The second area for our state that's an area of priority for the LCAP is focused on how all of those supports lead to student outcomes. And we often look at this through kind of the end data. So we're often measuring student outcomes through our 12th graders. We're looking at how many of them are going on to college or career, have access to those opportunities. But we also look at some of the progress along the way. So we'll look at our English learner proficiency and reclassification, look at pass rates, and we'll look at performances on assessments, again, that will provide access. The final area is the one that I find the most intriguing. You can go to the next. I'll have to come up with a signal. Is engagement. And engagement is the one that we really are tackling this year through some new resources. We're looking at engagement of parents and students, both through who shows up and who brings their voice and who doesn't. So with parental involvement, their participation in our governance structures, both at the school site and at the district, and what role they're playing in decision making. Are they offering recommendations? Are they serving in leadership roles where they are making decisions? Pupil engagement, again, we're looking at attendance no longer as following the rules and compliance, but we're looking at attendance as an indicator of students being connected, students feeling safe. So it's both attendance and chronic absenteeism as indicators of how well we're doing, how well we are engaging our students. Are we challenging them? Are we making school a place where they see themselves and their interests represented? And then, of course, those kind of summative assessments around dropout and graduation rates. But I think I'm speaking for all of our leadership when I say that that's too late. We can include that data, but that's kind of that end-of-the-line data that doesn't give you much to do with. We really want to be looking more at that progress monitoring of who's coming to school and who isn't. And then overall school climate, what we're measuring right now are our suspension and expulsion rates, which again are that, you know, when things aren't working, the number of students that are either suspended in school or out of school or expelled. But we're also interested in determining along the way how many of our students feel comfortable in school, how many of our students feel connected, both academically and socially, and doing that through surveys. So again, those are the three areas the state has identified. And in the next slide, what I've done is taken a look at our six goals and how those key areas, those priority areas for the state align. With any good goal, you're going to find more than one key area. So if we look at goal one as an example, that all students will be college ready and will successfully access post-secondary educational and career opportunities, that could be pupil outcomes as measured through A through G. But it could also be an indicator of engagement, so students feeling comfortable in their school, students feeling connected to their school. So with each of our six goals, I put in parentheses what the state key priority area might be. And mostly what I'm doing here is just showing the ways in which we might take our LCAP and look at how it can coexist with our goals and metrics. So in the second part of this report, I want to share with you some examples of our current metrics, again, for 2014-15, that are both showing or demonstrating our progress towards our district-identified goals and also the key priority areas in the LCAP. So under conditions of learning, again, this is that framework piece, 99% of our certificated and classified employees
are meeting the compliance step by No Child Left Behind, meaning that they're fully credentialed. We have some data around our facilities that I think we've heard tonight we can definitely be using even more tools, because when we say 7 of 12 school sites rated 100%, that's one indicator. But then we also hear from our facilities directors and from our students that there are many areas of concern. And then moving down, 100% of students do have access to the standards-aligned instructional materials that we accomplish through our Williams audit. And we make sure that our students in their core content areas have access to the standards. So this, again, is the framework. If it's working well, then we don't hear a lot about it. We don't talk a lot about it. We just kind of take it for granted. But on the next slide, where we look at our pupil outcomes, we see some areas of progress, and we see some areas where we need to do more work. We just received our new SELP scores this month, and I'm going to be taking a look at that and sharing that with you hopefully next month. But I'm sharing with you right now our SELP data from 2014-15. We did see an increase in the number of English learners making progress, making one-year progress. So in the secondary, from 49% to 57%. And then the elementary stayed about the same. So we're going to dig into that a little deeper, because what we are working on as a district and then as a state is we want our students to make a year progress every year. And what we're seeing is that often they plateau at once they reach the intermediate level. For our students who do reach the level of reclassification, we want to continue monitoring. Was this, did this decision that we made to reclassify them not only lead to greater access, but are they continuing to demonstrate proficiency? And what we saw was that the number of secondary students who are meeting proficiency on the SRI, which is our reading comprehension assessment, went up slightly, and our elementary decreased. So that's just, again, information for our site teams to be looking at, helping them think about when is it appropriate to reclassify a student, when do we want to give them more support. In our next slide, we're going to look at some of our data that has to do more with our high school students. So we've increased the percentage of students taking and passing more eighth-year honors classes. And then the second data point is the one that I think we're particularly proud of, because we're looking not only at the number or the percentage in this case of students who are meeting the A2G requirement, but really that next piece of, once they've met that requirement, being able to apply to and be accepted at a 2 or 4 year college and university. And we see higher percentages there because the students who are going on to a two-year college do not need to be A through G, do not need to have met those requirements, but it's still exciting to see that percentage for our high school seniors in 2014 and 15. The engagement data, we continue to reduce the expulsion, so we reduced by 1. Our goal is 14, and we're seeing a reduction in the number of suspensions both in school and out of school, in high school and in middle school. In elementary school, we saw a sharp increase in the number of suspensions, and when we looked into that data, we learned that it was resulting from 3 students who had extraordinary struggles, and those suspensions were part of the team working with the family, with some support personnel, to find the appropriate placement and the appropriate level of support for those students. Our chronic absence rate is really the focus of our social workers. That work that they're doing right now with our high school principals and AP and counseling teams. 17% for high school is extraordinarily high, and middle school 11%. So that is where they're digging in. They are meeting with students and families, trying to catch them early on to find out what are the barriers to their attendance, and of those barriers, what are the barriers that we can quickly address? And then what are the barriers that require more of a diagnostic approach and more support from the community? 17.5% of the parents that we surveyed said that they participated in district level committees. I'm excited that our business office will be going out into the community for the long range facility master plan. I think that's going to engage more of our parents who may not have come to some of the other meetings, but we're always looking for opportunities to increase parent involvement on committees or at the very least at meetings where their voice can be heard. Some of our challenges. So the data that I've shared with you, some highlights in this report and then also the goals and metrics, the longer report. Much of that data is end of the year data, and our school teams, our teachers, our administrators really want the ability to progress monitor, and they are doing that at their sites currently. They're looking not only at grades, they're looking at student performance on some of our diagnostic assessments, and they're using that data to change placement, to change instruction, to look at what can be done during the year so that we're not just waiting until the end of the year. We're also challenged with how do we increase the access to A through G courses for underrepresented students. The data I reported out, it didn't break it down by subgroup, and I'll be bringing that back to you by subgroup and by school. So looking at what are the barriers that keep our underrepresented students from participation in A through G courses. And then, as always, this is something that is we've been monitoring, and it's time for us to really make some big steps towards increasing the number of students who reach the proficiency level, especially given that so many of our students who are classified as English learners don't truly have proficiency in their first language, Spanish. So how can we truly support them with reclassification? We have a couple of next steps. On Monday, our teacher leadership committee, I think, had their third meeting of the year, and they are developing common math benchmarks, and this addresses that progress monitoring tool that we haven't had. We've been dependent upon grades, and we know that's a frustration for teachers and for students alike. The common math benchmarks will give our teachers and students information early on so that they'll be able to locate where within the curriculum are students struggling and provide that intervention. We are collaborating with our county office to develop a plan for integrated ELD. And we're looking at that through the math adoption and through the next generation science standards. So looking at what are the language demands within both of those content areas. So how can ELD be more than just a standalone class, but be the way that we're bringing all of that content on board? And lastly, we are refining our response to intervention plans with our RTI coordinators. We're getting ready to have a retreat, which I'm told we should rename as an extended work day off-site, because there's not a lot of retreatness about it. It's just work. But we are going to be meeting with our leadership teams, our RTI coordinators, and really refining this plan. It's been years that we've talked about having RTI, and it's so wonderful to finally have a dedicated position and some resources so that we can develop that. So I'm looking forward to coming back in the next few months, being at the top of the agenda again, so that we can talk about how we're addressing some of these challenges. And I think as we move forward, moving away from the metrics piece of this being an end-of-the-year indicator to having some during-the-year progress monitoring.
Thank you, Angela. Do we have questions from the board? Ella.
Yeah, you mentioned in assessing school climate that the two ways are looking at the suspensions and expulsions, which are kind of too little, too late scenario. And then you mentioned surveys of, I think, students looking at connectedness and safety. And I just want to know, like, what that would look like and how students can really participate in that.
Thank you. That's a great question. And it makes me think that we are right now, we're surveying through the Healthy Kids Survey every 2 years. 5th grade, 7th grade, 9th grade. We're not surveying past 9th grade. We're also surveying 9th graders with the social emotional health survey, but we're leaving out a very important group. We do have an LSAP survey that will be coming your way, and within that survey, we have a combination of questions where students can indicate where they feel engaged, where they feel challenged, where they need support. But we also left boxes for more of a narrative approach, because we know that sometimes our questions don't really get at what is keeping students from feeling comfortable or keeping them from feeling engaged. So we need to get that out to all of our students, not just our 9th graders. So we'll be looking for ways to do that. We'll probably be imposing upon your teachers to to take up some of the class time to get those surveys.
Jeremy?
Yeah, I have three areas of concern. One, I'd like to have exact numbers of how many students take the AP exam and how many pass. Anyone, I think that would be more telling than just taking and passing an AP or honors class, but how many students actually take an AP exam and get a three or better. That's one. Two, I think we should do some longevity study and track graduation rates from two-year college and four-year college, because I think that would tell us more. Three, I'm wondering why our very problematic 11th grade math scores aren't mentioned. It's certainly an area that's a challenge, and I think if we're going to call this a goals and metrics update, it's one of the metrics that we need to really keep in the front of our minds, and therefore an improvement on that metric needs to be a goal.
So we do have the number of students by school who take and pass the AP exam. I think we could just put that in. We could delineate that in the goals and metrics. And I'm sure we'll keep that in because it is one of those, it's not necessarily progress, but it's that access piece, so we can add that in. The longevity, how many students are passing two and four-year colleges, I believe we have access to that information through CalPass. Chris is looking, reaching for the microphone.
We're trying to find a way to track this. It's really, really difficult to do. And it's something the state is working on, and we're working on it as part of our goals as S4C to be able to track it for the county. And we're able to get some, we can get data on persistence at Cabrillo, and we're getting data on persistence at CSUMB and UC. It's, our kids go to a lot of different schools, and we're working on developing a system as part of this Gates grant. That's one of our goals of the grant, is to find a way to track this well, to be able to inform what we need to do to make sure that kids get through and complete and reach their goals, be it a certificate, be it in an AA, be it a BA, or more.
And I think lastly, the 11th grade math scores are not a surprise. I don't want to say that's a baseline. I think that's something we've known for a while. Even though the CAS was a new assessment, it's disturbing information, but again, it's not new information. Through the work of the teacher leadership through the Gates grant, I've heard them talk about the importance of catching students early on, that we've had a, I don't want to say this is a culture, because I don't think anybody supports this, but we have had a practice of assigning students to take the class again when they fail. And there is research that shows that that is not effective. So having those benchmarks 6 to 8 weeks in, and having an intervention coordinator who can then support the teacher with identifying what are the strategies that might best support the student. We don't want to see students condemned to failure past that year. So I do look forward to bringing that. For two of our high schools whose RTI coordinators are focused on math, we've seen some success with their work with both Algebra 1 and Algebra 2. I want them to be able to share that with you. We'll have a math study session in April, which might be the appropriate time to do that. But I just want to assure you that it is at the heart of math teachers' conversations, and they are dedicated this year to really using the RTI coordinator and that teacher committee to identify the benchmarks and supports early on.
Sheila?
I don't know if this fits with what you're doing, Angela, but I'm wondering if the parents and teachers have been asked to weigh in. I'm thinking particularly about math, although I think it's true across the board that one of the things I hear is parents and teachers wishing for more flexibility because students don't learn according to how we decide necessarily that there will be more choices in terms of their students. And for, I guess it really hit me when you were bringing this up, because I have heard parents who have, calm parents who've been driven to insanity trying to get across the idea that they do not want their student to fail again the class that they failed with the same teacher at the same school, taught the same way, and they are told, no, I'm sorry, now that you're in, you can't move. And I'm wondering, are these parents being, are parents being asked this question and asked what they think might be solutions that would work better? Because I'm astounded when I hear it. They have a sense about what is cockamamie about our system that we often don't see because we're looking for other aspects of it, you know, like being consistent across schools and across teachers and all that kind of stuff. So I guess I'm wondering about that, about math in particular, but also in general, because I find that the parents that are most upset are the ones that had the B and C students who feel that there's lots for one direction, there's lots for the other direction, but if you're in the middle, there's not much flexibility or room for what would work to help the student achieve. That's one big long question.
It's a big long question about parent involvement, I think. And so it's the really...
And us provide, tapping in.
Right. Yeah. How do we provide that parent voice? We've talked for a few years now about a task force, and I think we're in a place now with adoptions, with bringing on board some new curriculum, with looking at the integrated math, to really have a task force where the parent voice, the student voice, teachers, principals, community, board, could come together and not only articulate what are the problems, but what are some of the solutions. I think given that we're moving to this adoption, we have more of the tools to respond. It would have been frustrating a few years ago to sit around and say, what are we going to do? But we have an RTI coordinator, we have intervention periods, we have intervention curriculum that's being developed. And so it would be really great to have that form start sooner than later, get the parent voice, have the parent voice, not just the single parent or the parents who are there on the committee, but ways to have parents share their thoughts with that task force, with the goal of having a TK through 12 math program that acknowledges different ways of learning math and different ways to respond when students don't learn math.
And I think, you know, some of the ways that parents have given us feedback is through the parent survey that we have, that we've gotten a lot of feedback about mathematics in that survey. We are going to be posing to the DAC some specific questions about math. They're going to help us as we're looking at, because we're looking at math not only as a district, but as a county. And all of the LCAP processes across the county, there are going to be four questions that we're posing to our stakeholder groups about mathematics. They're going to be a part of what's happening this spring. So there are ways that this is happening, and I agree with Angela that you know there as we're in this time of just incredible as we have this incredible need to address, you know, outcomes in mathematics, not just in Santa Cruz City Schools. It's not just a Santa Cruz City Schools problem. It's a county problem. It's a national problem. How do we ensure our kids are prepared and doing well and successful in mathematics? And our teachers are deeply committed to that work and wanting to see our kids successful. And as we go through the adoption process, as we go through all the professional development that is paired with that, all of these things are working towards that same end of ensuring that students are successful.
Patty?
Thank you. I just wanted to also request not just the take and pass rate of the AP classes, but the number of students enrolled. Mm-hmm. So to show me who is enrolled and who actually does decide to take the test and why.
Ella?
Yeah, so this is also in regards to the AP test. And the looking at the student scores on the AP test, looking at who's in the AP classes and passing them reflect two very different things. I'm just thinking about my AP Lit class right now. I want to say there's over 30 of us. There's enough so that when everyone's there, someone has to go without a desk. But only a handful of kids are. That's another facilities thing, I guess. But there's only a handful of kids who are actually taking the test. And it varies from subject to subject to the APs. Sometimes students aren't taking the test because it's just an extra financial burden, and they feel like taking the class is already impressive enough for colleges or for their academic goals. Mm-hmm. But in other instances, it's because students feel that the AP classes aren't being taught the test as well as they might be, and they're not being adequately prepared for the test, whereas other students are simply taking it because it has a higher standard and they can be in a bit more of a competitive academic environment in AP classes as opposed to the regular classes that don't have the same prerequisites. Mm-hmm. So it's important to look at both of those.
Erin?
So I know just from some of my classes that a major reason some kids take it that teachers give them is that they either say that you don't take a final because you take your final before the AP test in May, so you don't do it at the end of the year. And the way that our schedule is set up, other schools around us have the extra time at the beginning of the school year, so they get out earlier, but they have the extra 2 weeks, which goes along with where finals are. And so they have an extra 2 weeks of instructional time that often is the, especially in like history subjects and other things, the last like century or something like that, where we rush through and they have those extra time. And so both of those are some issues.
Angela, did you want to comment on this before we went to the public?
I think this would be really helpful. We haven't specifically surveyed AP students, and already they're bringing up some barriers that I don't think I knew existed. We might have guessed at them. I think the schedule is really difficult. But not knowing exactly what the practices are about, if you take a final or if you take the test. So I think that would be really helpful to survey our AP students, both about their reasons for enrolling in the class and then why they did or did not take the test.
And Sheila?
I think I would just like to say, and I don't mean to say that we shouldn't be part of the whole nation and the county, but I would also like to see if we can solve some things in terms of our school district by itself. And one of my concerns is things like this, that I'm hearing from students also, and this is not Santa Cruz, but in the county, I'm hearing a lot of students saying, but if I don't do this, if I don't take this, if I don't get this grade, then I will never go to college. I don't know where that's coming from, but it's driving me crazy. And I think that I would like us to make sure that it's not happening among our students, that there's some kind of a belief that there's only one way to college, and that is through all the APs and getting the best grades possible, and that they understand that there are other choices to be had, because I'm dealing with too many students who are actually falling apart on this issue and thinking that they can go nowhere and do nothing. So you're reminding me again of that, not to mention the chair driving me crazy. Okay. I'll bring a chair from my house. But so I would like, when I talk about like talking to the parents, I would just like to see us talk to our students and our parents about what they're seeing are the problems and what they see might be better solutions. Because Santa Cruz has always been famous for being able to do this for ourselves, to think for ourselves, to come up with our own solutions. And as much as I believe in doing all the other stuff, I would also like to see us do that. So I wanted to just throw that in there. Thank you.
Sheila, I just want to speak to why I think that our work with the county is really critical.
I know it's
critical. We have 6 feeder districts that feed into our high school programs that contribute to those 11th grade scores, and that our alignment and our work together to ensure our kids are ready at each grade span is really, really critical.
and that we're working collaboratively to ensure that all of our kids have access and opportunity to the supports they need to be successful at each grade span. And for us in our district, we're in a unique situation where we're two districts unto ourselves, but we also have two larger districts and three very, one school districts that are all separate and all a part of our system, and they're all our kids. So how do we work together to make sure that all of those kids are ready and can meet all their goals? So that's why for me, as a leader in this district, it's really critical that we take a lead role with that and are working to have those conversations across those districts.
Just to clarify, I know it's critical, and I said I believe in it. Mm-hmm. However, many of these small things seem small, are things that are happening within our district that we may be able to solve, and they seem to be causing us some major problems. So I would like to see us also pay attention to those, because we can make a difference with them.
Absolutely.
That's all.
Absolutely.
Do we have comments or questions from the public?
Casey Carlson speaking as a resource specialist, representing a concern of other high school resource specialists and possibly thinking that the LCAP funds could eventually help with this problem. As a district, we've been looking at reducing special ed referrals, and at the high schools, I think, anecdotally, we have a growing number of 504 plans every year. And it would be interesting to see them. But the general ed teachers are just buckling under the pressure because there isn't anyone to really administer the 504 plans. The counselors are supposed to do it, but their workload is crazy. And they brought up the suggestion before in the context of we can't possibly administer the 504 plans. I'm bringing it up tonight because we see students who are on 504 plans referred then to us for special ed assessment because the parents aren't satisfied, because the students aren't making progress with the accommodations. And remember, 504s are a general ed program, not a special ed program. It's an intervention. And so those students will have accommodations drawn up by their counselor and the vice principal, who don't necessarily have the expertise to understand what curriculum interventions would work for those students. Those accommodations are put on Infinite Campus. The teachers can either access them or not, remember them or not. The counselors cannot possibly follow up with all the teachers for all those students. Those students maybe come to take tests in a quieter setting. That's usually in the middle of the counseling office. No one's really supervising them. So parents look at our program and they say, oh, if they're in special ed, they have a resource specialist case manager who's going to make sure that the general ed teachers know the accommodations and are monitoring the accommodations and are providing a focused test center. So we've been talking, and I brought this up with Stacy. I've been saying if you really want to reduce some of those referrals, we need some focused FTE at least the major three high schools to case manage those 504s. And I don't know if that's extra counselor time. I don't know if that's a resource specialist, because that would be cheaper. Possibly, who would say they have 0.3 where they're coordinating the 504 plans. But somebody needs to be a case manager at the high schools to help develop the plans with the parents, because the counselors don't really know what they're doing, and sometimes they come up with wacky accommodations that won't even work, and then parents get upset. They need to write the plans, they need to distribute the plans and inform the teachers, they need to monitor the plans, and then they need to help do things like provide test centers. And I think if we had a well-developed program in our three high schools, that might cut down some of the high school referrals. Especially students like the Asperger's and autism spectrum, where they have organizational issues, you really need someone who's going to work with those students. And if we don't have that, the parents come back and ask for a special ed assessment. So I hope that's something that we can look at possibly funding in the future through the LCAP.
Can I ask a question?
It's a public. You can.
Kristen Botenard, principal at Brown's Authority Middle School and former AP at San Jose. I just wanted to add another thing that plays into whether or not kids take AP tests, and that's what colleges are applying to. There are many colleges that will not accept an AP score, especially if they don't offer a class in it. So, for example, environmental studies AP class at Santa Cruz High, very few kids take the test because most colleges will not give credit and they see it as a lot of money with no potential gain.
Okay, questions? More questions from the board?
Casey, could I ask you a question about what you said?
Sure.
I really appreciate what you said. I think you're absolutely right on. And I don't think that teachers or counselors realize that they are directly themselves personally responsible, that they can be sued. This is a federal government program, and I'm astounded, not just here, throughout the county, by people's unawareness of that. If you were looking at your school and your job and taking that as a sample of across the district, how, for the amount of students you have, how many might you not have to evaluate or bring in if such a program existed? How many, what percentage, I guess I'm asking, and what percentage?
This year, I think we've had 5 new referrals so far this fall from students who were already on 504 plans. I just identified one. The team and I brought in a student who had health impairments, who was on a 504, and it didn't work, and he was failing. I had another student earlier in the semester. I think we've had 3 other ones, so that's just at my school in one semester. But the psychologist is really trying to, you know, go through the steps of the intervention, and they start with the 504 plan, but it just doesn't, nothing happens. It's on a paper because there's really no one to implement it. So then the student does have a documented disability, they come back and then they say, we need special education services. And of course, then we know that that's much more expensive and it's a more restrictive environment for the student. So sometimes it's appropriate, but sometimes it really wasn't needed had there been somebody to help monitor and implement those services.
Right, and I guess I'm asking, do you think that if we implemented such a program, it would pay for itself in terms of not?
I think that eventually it would if it was done right, because those students and parents would feel that they have that advocate.
Right. And I would say,
can I suggest that we have staff follow up with the RSP teachers and maybe we do some homework on what's happening at each of the schools and look at what that might look like.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to ask. If it was possible for us to follow up on this, because I think it's a really good plan. And I find that for the 504 plans, everybody in the county is using the same rubber stamp plan, which is in no way addresses the purpose of 504 plan or of the Disabilities Act. You know, they have to fit into what the school decides to offer, not what they need. So I would like to look into this more. Thank you, Casey, for bringing it up.
And I forgot to ask if there were any more questions. Dr. Luxton, did you have a comment?
May I suggest that Sheila and Casey get together and work that out and bring us back a report? I think that would be very fruitful.
You're not too busy, Casey, okay. Right? I'd do it with you in a sec.
Thank
I'm
you, Angela.
I'm not qualified, but you are.
I was waiting. We're on comments for the board now.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment that it brings back to my earlier board report that I hope that we can really look towards a solution to what we can do with our calendar to work towards our student outcomes from kindergarten or PK all the way into grade 12, 14, and 16. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Angela. And now we are to preliminary enrollment projections. And is that right, Chip? Yes?
Yes. Thank you. I'm waiting for Ms. Vanna to bring up the report. While she's doing that, one of the real positives of the digital school financial system, Mr. Member Schoenig, I thought we had put in the report, so I apologize, but the budget for transportation is $1.1 million, $456. We're able to pull it up on the web, so I apologize.
I thought we had included it also. 2016-17 enrollment projection. It takes me back, I recall, to just about a little over a year ago when I was sitting in front of about 15, 16 people that were interviewing me for this position. And one of the questions that came up was, how do we get better at projecting numbers for Santa Cruz City Schools? What are some of the steps that we can take? And I called my first board meeting when Superintendent Monroe, Assistant Superintendent Parks, valiantly undertook this role as I was just getting my feet wet, literally, within the Santa Cruz City Schools District. And so one of the things we definitely heard was, how do we really get better information out to the board? How do we get better information to project what our growth or our declination may be for students within Santa Cruz City Schools? And what are some of the factors that really create the growth or decline within our district? So bringing forward to you tonight is our report of where we are right now within our district and what are some of the factors that we've done. We are in the final year of a contract with Decision Insight. Thank you, Anna. We partnered with to do with the demographic studies for the district. And we found, especially Assistant Sue Parks and I, just a really program that is strong to give us the information we need, that can help us go in, literally plot every single student within our district, where they fit within our boundaries, where they live outside of our boundaries. So the report is extremely powerful that we can then garner from this, and we bring into the report tonight. It's extremely critical as we continue the planning for revenue, planning for staffing, planning for what students are coming and where they're coming from. Again, though, the report is as strong as the information we provide and work with the demographer. And we really felt we took a real positive step with this as we really gave some information this year that really enhanced it. We'll look even forward to the future to really give them more information. For example, we've learned through some of our local insight and working with our own staff, the open enrollment process that occurs as students that would be projected to go, for example, to Soquel from our feeder districts that really then transfer out to Harbor High, and what those numbers have been for the last 4 to 5 years and how that impacts the numbers at each site. And we've attempted to incorporate that movement within this report we're presenting tonight. The study also reflects our current city school data, which has feeder district information, county birth rates, and the plans for new housing. It doesn't indicate the cost of the housing, but it just talks about what a few plans there are for Santa Cruz City Schools. So if you recall back on October 28th, this is the report we presented, just the really preliminary information that we had. And we feel as we present this next year at that same time frame, we will have been worked with this vendor another year where we really have really good numbers to present to show the growth or potential declination, or that validated our projections from this year. And so what we do show now, this is the report we also show, we show the growth from 03-04 all the way to currently projected for 15-16. And what's critical in 03-04, you all know because you lived in much more than I did here at the time, when there were 6 local elementary schools, looking at them, the enrollment population, and where would it now be in 15-16. So if you look back to 03-04, there were 2,177 students in CBEDS. Currently in 15-16, we're showing 2,211. And you see the wave of how it goes based upon the school and the color on the legend throughout that period since this came into effect. We also presented information on this middle schools, where we were back then, also from 03-04 to 15-16. And also we continued that with the high schools for Harbor High, Santa Cruz, and Soquel. This was the information we presented specifically back at our time frame back in October. We wanted to also include going back to 03-04. We actually presented about a 10-year run at that time. We wanted to go all the way back to show what it would be, because it seems to be the consistent nature of discussion within the district itself. We also have broken out for the small school piece. Of course, you'll see Loma Prieta, which is at that time was / Costa Nova, which it continues to be here. And you see that projected growth as it pertains to these schools also within our district. So what was critical is we worked with Decision Insight to present, and then what they did is created a report that we've sent to all you as the board members, which indicates a lot of the factors that went in to create the actual number of values that they have. What we then did, based upon the numbers they presented to us, we then began to work with all of our local information to present some of the information that we're going to show towards the end of this particular projection report. So what do we have here? This Decision Insight Enrollment Report, again, presents an executive summary of what's available online with this vendor partner.
It provides both moderate and conservative projections. Conservative projections, they really stress, are based upon revenue budgeting and student growth, where the moderate is really projected for the use of facility planning for the district as a whole. Some of the key variables that affect the projections, of course, are kindergarten enrollment change, cohort change. How do these class sizes move forward in the future? Is the growth consistent? Does it decline? Does it increase based upon this group of students that started in kindergarten and where it moves over that time frame? What are the dwelling units? How do they affect our generation rates, or in our case, the lack of, since we're landlocked, which also causes a very high factor of cost, which definitely impacts the families that can or cannot move into our district. What have been the birth rates? And of course, all these factors come into play with more information that they gather. And also, what we're doing is incorporating both student and school data from Santa Cruz City Schools as well as DI. They then apply their mathematical formulas to the data to come up with their projection reports. So what are some of the long-term projections? Now, these are what they're showing specifically from the data that we've input. And we really just really began this year to tip the scales as far as really giving them better information over some of the patterns that we know locally that will affect these long-term projections. So you'll see the first highlight, which is 2016. And what's not included in here, for example, is they don't include any homeschool children, any particular independent study ratios that are outside the normal work week or work schedule. They can, as we begin to develop that information, instead of they can include those to see what patterns there would be, which is some of those factors of what they just cannot do unless we provide that information to them. So some of the long-term projections you'll see as you broken out by transitional kindergarten all the way to grade 12, and what does it do for us as a district? And you see over this time frame, their projection shows a decline in the number of students based upon many of the factors that we've just discussed. What we then did is we said, okay, how does it affect our elementary schools? So this is just wrapping up all the elementary schools broken out by grade, K through, in this case, 6 runs into our middle school. So there's some factors here where some are in, for example, and some of our alternative education sites that roll into some of the figures. But you also see our elementary schools where we're projected for 2016 from Decision Insight and taking that for 10 years. The other second area is a 5-year, and then we add on the end of the 10. We also took a look at our middle schools. Of course, this seems a little more subject under our controls. We only have 2 that affect this particular graph. Again, it shows where they're projected for 2016, out to 5 years, 2021, the second shaded area, and 2025. Again, a smaller percentage, but still a declination of students to be enrolled in our sites. As we got to the high schools, as they did this piece, based upon the fact that Delta is one of our schools within our system, based upon the LEA and the reporting structure, they had it included in some of the grand totals. So what we did, we're working with EI to remove it for our discussion. But what we did is we independently pulled each site that we had. So this is where we went to. And we could pull all the other sites, and we have that ability to do that online. SoCal High School, you see exactly where they're at. And this particular one seems to be affected in some positively. Again, based upon the feeder schools that come into play in that particular part of the area to show where right now they're projected to be about 11.25 for next year off their preliminary. Actually, down to 1134 if they include in the SDC side of it. And you'll see down in 2025 where they're showing to be approximately 1165, a 40 student growth over that 10-year period. Santa Cruz High School, right now they're projected, they're at 1005 based upon some of the current information. 2016, they were showing a small increase based upon the factors they had all the way up to 2025, it shows them reducing down to 852. Again, it's taking these birth rates, taking all these other factors, see exactly how that would be extrapolated out. And then we have Harbor High School. Right now they're showing, again, 2016, a potential bigger decline, but then this is where we added our local information to show which number of open enrollment students would be coming over from the other potential sites, and that's when we began to modify some of the numbers with some of our local information that we would then share in DI as we move forward with this particular vendor. So what are our preliminary projections? So what we'll be sending out to the sites, from the elementary site, Bayview right now, we're projecting an enrollment of 555 for the 16-17 school year. Right next to it is our actual CBES report. that was submitted to the state in October 7th, which is now subject to verification throughout this process. De La Viega, we're projecting right now a total of 631 compared to a CBEDS of 635 for this year. Gall, relatively flat with the 412 of CBEDS this year compared to 411 next year. And Westlake, right now it's showing a decline of about 40 students compared to their current CBEDS number of 594. So based upon these numbers here, you'll see a projection of about a 60 student decline at the elementary sites. As we go to the middle school, you'll see here CBEDS right now they're projected to 1152 for this fiscal year. Right now we're projecting next year, based upon some of the smaller class sizes that are replaced in the outgoing eighth grade class, to show a small decline of 29 students at 1123. As we break it out to the high schools, you'll see, even though, for example, Harvard, if you went back specifically to the Decision Insight report, they have them dropping down to about 870. And this is where we work with our open enrollment transitions that happen, what we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years, put those numbers back into our mix. And right now, we're showing them have a projected enrollment for next year of about 910. Compared to a CBEDS number this year of 958. We see Santa Cruz to remain relatively flat. And then Soquel High actually seen an increase of projected about 55 students from a 1088 CBEDS to 1143. Again, based upon the feeder information and which students would be projected to be open enrolled at other campuses within our district. And lastly, for those group of schools within our district, the alternative sites. Which takes into consideration, again, our current CBEDS, where it says, where have we seen a decline of students within some of these alternative programs? How are they effective? What students could possibly, or what areas could be increased based upon potential growth? And we're actually looking at, right now, one of the last adjustments we did was really looking at Monarch, really jumping up to about 123, just made some changes in the last couple of days after this was submitted to the board, just based upon some requests and potential areas of growth within that school site. So what are the next steps that we have with this particular? It's not a one cake, one point in time. It's a constant work in progress as we do getting more information to be utilized with our vendor that we've selected as a district. Update the information. We then calculate and send the staffing projections to site, which we're probably about 96% done. Our goal from Assistant Sue Parks and I is to send those out tomorrow to the school sites. They can begin to create that master schedule based upon these number of students that we're projecting. And then we will definitely be using this information to update the budget information. It'll have a direct impact on some of the information we learned today, which will then be revised in May, of how we begin to set that up for actual adoption by the district and you as a board back in the month, or looking forward to the month of June. So it's a constant work and process that we do to adjust the information, to update it, to make sure we have the most current information to make, hopefully, the strongest projections that we can within the district. Smalley. So with that, I'll open it up to questions.
Questions, Jeremy.
Jim, just to be clear, we are projecting a decline of 14.3% at the elementary level from 2182 total to 1870. That's a decline of 312 students over the next 10 years.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. cool.
What's the plus and minus of this, you know? I go to Nate Silver at 538.com, and there's always a plus and minus.
As far as?
An over and under. Oh. I mean, how accurate is this? Because that's the school. That's alarming.
Right, over the 10-year period?
Yeah.
And some of the critical factors that we saw, and me specifically working with the demographer, our kindergarten cohort has been very erratic over the past 3 to 4 years. 1 year, it'll jump up some significant percentage, then it significantly declines. We take into consideration the housing factor of what really limits the amount of younger families with younger children moving into the district to take advantage of the educational experience here. This is really, in my case, the first attempt at really working with a demographer. We feel the numbers here are pretty tight, especially for looking at 16-17. I think we'll continue to flush out what we look at the next 5 to 10 years. I won't even give you a plus or minus because I will continue to work with this demographer and what that will be. what I think, what I feel confident in this particular projections, to say confident, is, again, when you put in the affordability, when you look at the next housing plan or project within Santa Cruz, it's about 2 to 3 years off, and it's about 60 units that'll be going up to generate new students. You put those factors together with a small growth in the kindergarten classes, that's what leads to this decline over the next 10 years. Is it subject to change? Absolutely. Again, like I say, this is the one point in time right now based upon the information that we know, and the goal is to continually update it. I feel the information on working with this demographer, we really took a giant step this year with making sure and validating the information that we were sending to them. They actually extrapolated data from our student data system to validate where they live, where they come from, where they're transferring from outside of not just our feeder schools, but outside other districts. And the strength of this program and us giving them better information and insight, especially when it comes to our open enrollment, we'll get better at using this company to get better numbers over the next 5 to 10 year period. What doesn't weigh in our favor, again, is the fact of the number of housing projects and the affordability or inaffordability to be able to do that within our area. That seems to be their bigger piece. And based upon that, a decline probably in the birth rates.
Mm-hmm. Sheila.
Well, one thing is I think that probably the demographer does have the standard deviation, and it may not have offered it because it's a wonky thing to offer, but I'm kind of with Jeremy on this. I'd like to know what it is and how broad it is.
Sure.
So that we have an idea what to make of this. Mm-hmm. And then my other question was that when I look at the high schools and the middle schools, I can see by the schools what's happening. The elementaries I'm seeing by the conglomerate, and since we have this overcrowded, the La Viega, and a small Galt, I'm wondering if there's a way for us to get the projections by schools in the elementary schools.
Absolutely.
Would that be possible? Because I think that would be helpful to see
if
it's going to, because going down that much in some ways says, well, we wouldn't be adding another elementary school, but is it going down in the wrong places or the right places? That's what I'd like to know.
Absolutely. Okay. We can send, you should break out each school and send it out to you. We can probably get that out as soon as tomorrow based upon what they projected. Again, we would then go in and look at all these different areas and somewhat look at it from a local perspective.
Here, as Jim said, these projections are projections, and we're going to closely monitor them. We're going to work closely with Decision Insight. We're going to look and see how things come in this next school year and the subsequent school year. But it also needs to be part of both our short and our long-term planning. And I told the board that this would be the first step in us looking at Natural Bridges and what we need to do. And as you know, we have this information, and we continue to ask questions. I have some more questions for the demographers. I want to verify some more things moving forward in the next couple months. And I'm going to ask the board to give us some time this spring to look at what are some different options that we could have for the site. When we met with UCSC this last time in December, they also gave us permission. We started talking with them last spring about the possibility of whether they'd be interested in a short-term use of that site if we weren't occupying it with an elementary school. They did consider it, and they gave us permission to be public about it. Now they didn't want us to be public about it initially. They're not interested in a short term. They would want to purchase the site. I wouldn't recommend that we sell the site. But that was what their interest was. It was either in a purchase or a 99-year lease, and I told them I didn't believe that was something that we'd be interested in.
Public comment?
Additional board comment? Oh, sorry, Deb.
No, I heard someone say that's closing a whole school, but I think if you look at it, it's just a slow decline over 10 years of kids being crowded until we get to the point where the schools are where they should be, because all of the schools are overcrowded. Mm-hmm. So if we were talking about, you know, it's just a different way of looking at it. It's like we probably shouldn't be opening a school right today if these projections are true, But we're also not going to be looking at closing the school. We're looking at slowly keeping kids crowded until we get to the point where the facility's going to have them. That's all.
Patty.
I do want to comment that one of the pieces brought forward on the governor's budget and the direction we're going with facilities is that the governor is not behind a real facilities bond. So as we look to how we can best serve our students at the elementary level and use our sites, we may have to consider what the governor has been working out the entire time is the local funding. So it may be something you may want to explore is would our community want to take this on with this, more so than just a facilities bond, meaning the cost of running another site.
And just my last comment to tag on to Member Tracy Crew's comment. Again, I think this is why it's very critical that we're, with this information, we've already sent it also to our architect planners. So I think it's critical as we go out to our community meetings, how this data is incorporated to our current school sites, how those sites need to be, for lack of a term, renovated to meet our student needs that we have there based upon the size, the makeup, et cetera, the programs that we're offering. And I think it's really critical why we, in some ways, we do this hand in hand with all these different variables to create a better picture to present back to you as a board. So I think it's very valid comments, so thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute break, but it's really going to be 5 minutes. Starting the timer.
Chris? I think we probably all safely wouldn't consider selling it, but I wonder if we would consider selling it. Are they interested in part of it, or they want the whole thing?
There's lots of reasons why I don't think we should do that.
But say that again.
There'd be lots of reasons why I think we shouldn't sell any land. Like
okay,
that.
Maybe I'll just ask you about it.
It's because being able to ever acquire land as a school district in the future, in 20 years, if things shifted in going, you'd be thousands of dollars.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking you wouldn't want to do the whole thing. But I would.
But it would be a.
It's such a huge site that we have.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Okay, maybe next time you could tell me why.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw all her end of program posts.
So she's told, but Friday we head down to Fullerton, so she's going to get it.
Okay.
So, but she's likely coming.
But you're right.
She had her sister, so.
Nice.
Or she was at home.
Yeah. They're getting ready to start the Harbor Music Hall. We're getting in the intro.
She went this morning to help the kids with their minds and their
That's awesome.
And I don't tell her that she should,
You know, Curtis, he's on my list too.
Well, no, Rita has an early childhood program,
but he insists that they're both perfectly functioning.
Yep.
I'm back at my seat, so
good job.
I quite a while. And
okay, we lost a few people for Angela.
Did he send you an email today?
He did, but it won't be resolved because.
Okay, we're going to start. Get started.
Well, that's it. But here's the thing. We started, those of us before this last week, in a whole room.
Okay, we're going to get started. I'm going to do that teacher thing where you start talking and everybody returns to their seat.
I'm big for pounding.
Okay, Superintendent's Mid-Year Progress Report. Turning it over to Chris.
Okay, so I committed to the board that when I made my first presentation in September on goals and action plans for the district, that I'd provide an update in January. So this is a mid-year update on where we are, and a lot of things are in progress. There's not a lot of data to provide at this point, but information about what action has been taken to date and what is coming. Again, this is based on all of our district goals. For goal number one, we're continuing the work to implement Common Core standards. There's all kinds of work being done. A lot of teacher-led work with our new coaches in math, in the next generation science standards, at every grade span, and all teachers are engaged in their site PLC work and in their collaboration on this effort. It's a huge shift, and like I've said repeatedly, it's one that where teachers need resource dedicated to support them with this effort. I serve as the S4C steering committee chair, and I mentioned before to Sheila that I'm really committed to that work, again, because we have six districts from this county that feed into ours, and it's important that we are communicating well with them and aligned with them. And our focus is entirely at this point on mathematics and college readiness and how the two are linked. Continuing our participation in S4C to foster opportunities for students to experience the college 4th and 7th grade experiences. We had the October 4th grade CHIP, and we're in preparations right now for the 7th grade visits in the spring. For goal number 2, working to create a positive, engaging school environment. We said we were going to refine and monitor our RTI framework on school climate and culture. We're working... Brent Sporty Middle School and Brent Sporty Small Schools have been working on trauma-informed strategies with students. They had training in August and are continuing that work. Our middle and high schools began regular cost team meetings to screen and identify students in need of support, and we're refining and implementing positive behavior intervention supports K-5 and 6-8. So working on tiers of intervention and support for kids. What we're also doing around goal number 2, using data, we're refining the LCAP process and data collection so that we'll be able to provide ongoing data, like Angela was talking about, on our goals and metrics, just not summative data, but formative data that happens during the year to inform what we're doing. We're also in the process of learning Illuminate and working on that implementation. That's our data tool. It's new. It's also something that's countywide, and it'll be helpful for us when it's fully implemented because the data will come from our feeder districts directly to us and feed right into our system. So we'll have the full data on a student coming into SoCal High School or Harbor High School from any of our feeders from the time that they were in kindergarten. Hiring and supporting new social workers. In October, Kimberly Prohaska and Nareda Robles were hired as our social workers. We've talked about some of the roles that they're serving and meeting our goals earlier. Supporting effective safety committees at each school site. We had a complete training for our entire leadership team in August on safety with our SROs from both the sheriffs and the police department. We're continuing our collaboration with them. I'm set to meet with assistant principals next week on their safety plan development to see what resources they may need as they're working through that process at this point, this time of the school year. Providing, again, professional development, we talked about it, and there's Code Red training scheduled. Some schools have already done them, and others are continuing to work through them over the course of this next semester. Eliminating achievement gaps that exist between demographic groups. Many of the things that support that are our AVID programs. SoCal High has their first senior AVID seminar as we're growing out and expanding AVID. All three of our high schools now have four-year programs supporting students in their preparation for college and dealing with the hidden curriculum of our schools. Refining and monitoring our RTI frameworks. You've seen presentations from our RTI coordinators as they're working to create systems and structures to provide intervention and supports for our students. Building principals and assistant principals' capacity to support professional learning community work. Paul Bloomberg has been working with our leadership and skill teams specifically on formative assessment and learning targets and student self-monitoring this school year. And this is one of the ways that we're supporting this work. And the skill teams and school sites also have identified individual ways at their schools that they're working on that together that are specific to the needs of their professional learning community work. Building district teams, RTI coordinators, and instructional coaches. Our annual principal retreat is going to be, for the first time, not just principals. Our RTI coordinators, our coaches, our counselors are all going to be there together looking at our RTI frameworks, talking about how we're intervening with kids early, identifying their needs early, how we're screening them, and what are the structures that we have in place that are working, and where are the gaps? What are the things we need to do differently so that we can better serve kids and that these frameworks and systems work better in service of our students? We're using data effectively at all our, we are working to use data effectively at our site and district level. Again, with the LCAP program data monitoring, we're working to refine those metrics so that they're ongoing. We're doing tier one meetings at all of our sites. We're looking at, you know, meeting together either through cost or through academic teams in the elementary school, the SLTs, to evaluate where students are, what progress they're making in the curriculum, do we need to do something different to meet their needs? And we have some systems in place. It's growing and it's, you know, at each grade span in a different place, but it's beginning to happen. Goal number 4, developing a highly collaborative professional culture, continuing to support the work of SKILL. We're planning to have some conversation this semester about with SKILL leaders and with principals about what's working in our SKILL program, What may we need to adjust given where we are and what new needs are and all the changes we have now that we have coaches, now that we have RTI coordinators? Is there something we should be doing differently? Supporting a countywide teacher advisory committee for S4C. We do have teacher representatives from every grade span on that committee, and that group is talking about how do we work together as a county on that. Continue to support the teacher leader PLC. We're having monthly meetings, about 12 teachers attending regularly. It's a great group if anybody ever wants to join us. We meet the third Thursday of the month at B40 Middle Schools at 3:30, and having some really interesting conversation with teacher leaders about issues about teaching and learning and student success. I also sat on a panel at San Jose State for administrative candidates as we're being really thoughtful about how are we recruiting and supporting effective leadership in our district. Building a curriculum committee of teacher leaders to guide and inform curricular decision makings. Angela's going to be beginning with this group in the spring, working to define the purpose of the group and how they can support our instructional and support and advise our instructional program and decision making across the district from a central level and give input to the educational services team. What we want to continue also in this area is continuing to support the board in refining our governance structures. Our next government session is set for the 27th. I attended the CSBA Masters in Governance workshop, and that has informed some of the content of the governance handbook that you had a draft of and we'll be discussing on the 27th. Continuing to expand and refine our recruiting efforts. Right now HR is planning to attend 12 recruitment fairs, and this year Molly's going to be taking teachers with her, current teachers with her, to talk about what it's like to be a teacher in Santa Cruz City Schools, share with potential candidates what it's like to live in Santa Cruz, and to bring our teachers into that process of recruiting and bringing on new teachers to our team. We're also doing coursework, Molly, with CalTeach and CSUMB and UCSC as we're looking at a need for interns, especially in special education, and networking with the math departments in both of those universities and the education departments. We want to do a training with our bargaining units and our district negotiating team. We've been talking with the team leaders about how could we do some kind of interest-based bargaining. I know Barry has a potential trainer for us. I've also found a couple people talking around the different districts of use, so we want to talk more about who we could bring in to help us to continue to support our collaboration together. We're continuing to refine our budget process to develop clear priorities, more resources to become available to meet identified needs. Again, we have a schedule for the district advisory committee, data collection scheduled, board reports on each of the programs. We've brought to you all those LCFF program reports that are on our governance calendar. That's all part of that. We've revised our survey. We've had much better parent participation this year. We continue to have good participation from teachers and classified staff, and we're going to be reaching out more formally to other groups in the coming months. We supported passing 2 parcel taxes in November. That was mission accomplished. Developing a comprehensive facility master plan that is in process with community meetings beginning at the end of this month. Setting goals for increased attendance in the secondary district in collaboration with the new social workers. They came on again late in October. They are actively working on looking at targeting those students with chronic absences and how do we remove the barriers and get kids in school. Okay. With goal number 6, I also want to work at being very visible and connected with school sites. Cabinet was represented at all parent club meetings in the fall. We were able to attend a meeting at least at each school. the community meetings that we have as a board scheduled throughout the year. And by the way, I just found out that the GALT meeting has to be rescheduled because the GALT Health Sistema has been invited to perform at a Warriors game. And so there's going to be a community effort to attend a Warriors game on February 9th, so our community meeting is going to need to get rescheduled. We're working on getting that done. I visited all staffs with Barry this fall. I appreciated the opportunity to have those voluntary meetings. Classroom visits with trustees and principals. Collaborating with community partners like the Ed Foundation, the Warriors, Wharf to Wharf, Schools Plus, just to ensure that we have community-based funding sources are maximized on behalf of our students and those partnerships are built to support our students. I feel like, I lost this piece. I went through two of these. Message the district vision and goals and metrics with the staff and greater community. We did our first annual report to the community, sent out this October, and we plan to make that an annual report to the community. Cabinet membership in Santa Cruz and Sunshine Rotaries and the Chamber of Commerce this year is new. I've put in the sitting on the education panel for leadership at Santa Cruz. I'm going to be presenting the group that comes to the county office, different leaders from different sectors all over the county get together in different in a cohort each year, and on their education day, Michael's asked me to sit on that panel. Celebrate successes of students and staff ongoing via the new newsletter. Thank you, Nancy Lenz, and all of the people that contribute to that all the time. Mm-hmm. Working on communication to include family and community in the work and success of the district. Broaden distribution of our district newsletter to parents and community partners is something else that's happened this year. And we're continuing to work and refine that all the time. So I went through that really fast because it's the end of the night and there's a lot of things going on, and I definitely welcome your questions and ideas and different things, and we can, as always, have this as an ongoing conversation about what we're doing.
Questions from the board? Patty?
Yeah, I just have one quick question, and it's under goal number 5, and as we grow things out here, you have revised surveys conducted with better parent participation. Maybe next time you can give us some, or now, give us just a little bit of what qualifies better parent participation.
I think it's doubled.
But doubled from 1 to 2, or
it doubled from like 300 and something last year to 760.
So 1/10 of the school population.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that is via the SurveyMonkey, or are you talking about a collaborative of different areas of reaching for that?
That was through the SurveyMonkey that went out to all emails that we had from district parents.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sheila? Just an information question and then a question.
Mm-hmm.
Who does the Santa Cruz City Schools Facebook page?
Nancy.
Yeah. Nancy, it is spectacular.
Oh, that is so nice of you to say, because I am not really a social media kind of gal.
People are trying to learn.
Told me.
People are sharing it.
Oh.
Often.
I do
and passing on the information.
Yes, I do try to get it. And a lot of people send me information, and I try to put it right up so that we, you know, like.
And short and sweet, which is what does it.
Well, thank you very much. That is very nice to hear. Thank you.
And my question is. Yeah, is the time when we have our board next board meeting? Is that the time to do this? What I always kind of am left feeling like, for instance, I should have been clearer by now, but I'm getting tired, so I'm not as clear. Like goal 3, eliminate the achievement gaps. Okay, so we have this whole program which we developed in order to meet that goal, but then I find myself wondering, when do we say, how did this help us meet the achievement gaps, and is it succeeding, and what other achievement gaps may we not be meeting? You know, what other groups, for instance, the group I brought up with the students that are not the A students, and they're perhaps not the AVID students, that should we be bringing them in now? As we have done this successfully, should we be adding another part? When does that happen that we can look at it that way?
We're trying to look at it that way all the time. As we're looking at tiers of intervention, so and RTI is designed like that, that you're screening all kids and trying to identify what their needs are.
I'm not worried that you're not doing it. I'm worried about when does the board get a chance to say, these are our goals and metrics. Are we evaluating them? Are we sure that these are the goals and metrics? Are we doing what we had thought we set out to do? Are there things we would add or not?
Well, I think that, you know, as a board and as with your work setting the goals for the district, these have been the goals of the district and these are the goals that we've built our metrics on. We revised goal number 2 together at the beginning of this school year based on feedback from the board. So I think in an ongoing way, as the board asks us, you know, through these, you know, reports, because we are always reporting on our goals. Every time we're bringing a presentation to you on the LCAP is based on all these goals. My goals are based on all these goals. So if there's something that you want us to consider, you want us to look at, in any one of these presentations, there's an opportunity for conversation and discussion around that.
Okay, so I would just say, for me, it's 2 things. I don't know if this is on. And one would be that middle group of students and whether or not we should be thinking more about how we're going to address programs that might be of interest to them, like we did with AVID, like we do with AP courses. And the other would be the students who are missing school because they're of... I mean, I think we are addressing this, but are we looking at the, for instance, at the small schools, the students who are missing school because they actually don't have a place to live, or they have parents who are insisting that they be home to take care of the younger kids, or beating them regularly, or all that, and I know we are addressing that. That's why we brought in the social workers and such, but I find myself wishing that we had it in a formal way that allowed us to say, how are we moving along the program like we do with so many other things? So I'll just put those on the table.
So I think that's one of our goals, and Angela shared that today. We're looking at ways to monitor things in a formative way. How do we look at those cost teams that have been set up in the high schools, and the small schools has been doing that for a long time, monitoring those kids that are of concern and needing support, and looking at how impactful that is. And we're going to have to, Angela, do you want to?
I'll push that we, I spoke with Eileen about this last week, that we need to be thinking about how can we measure the impact of the social workers and safeguard student confidentiality. And she thinks that she can work with her team and with the cost teams in each of the high schools to begin looking for patterns, not only of what the problem is, but how we're solving that problem so that we can really be able to move forward with social workers as an effective resource to get our students to be attending school.
Yeah, and I guess I hope for the same kind of goal and metric clarity. So that it's like, okay, now we see this, and this is what we're finding. Now how can we address a program that fits right into it in a way that the board is involved in?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank Jeremy.
You.
Goal number 4, bullet point number 4, build a curriculum committee of teacher leaders to guide and inform curriculum decision-making, beginning spring with defining the purpose and building a group. Will this be tying into the LCAP process?
I'm going to let Angela answer.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jeremy, ideally everything should tie into the LCAP process.
Specifically
and in global terms, because the LCAP really is our action and accountability plan. The curriculum committee that will begin in the spring and then really hit the ground in the fall needs to have a very specific task. We've had some experience with curriculum committees that just meet, talk about how things are going. We have 2 content areas where we're looking at adoption, next generation science standards, and math. And the LCAP goal is to close the achievement gap. And when we look at that through continuity adoption, that gives us an even sharper focus. So that committee would be looking at not only the curriculum adoption, but what are the strategies within that content area that support our students who are underrepresented and support closing the achievement gap. So in that way, the curriculum committee is working to support our LCAP goals.
Questions or comments from the public? Additional board comments? Claudia.
Okay, I just want to say I'm just really impressed with how nicely the goals align with the LCAP, and it was really a great report. Thank you, Chris.
I agree. Great.
Okay. Oh, I can't read if I put my glasses on. Okay, we are to the public hearing. So this is the public hearing on January 13th, 2016, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Jim.
Thank you again, President Thompson. This is a follow-up from our meeting last month where the board ratified the agreement between the adult ed teacher unit as well as the district itself. At that time, there's normally a time frame in order to provide the AB 1200 disclosure according to working with the county of Santa Cruz County Office of Ed. We spoke at that time because we wanted to get the information for the ratification of the article in December, and this is just the actual follow-up to show the cost of the actual increase that was agreed to from both sides of the bargaining table and the affordability of that here to show moving forward.
Do we have questions from the board? Comments from the public? Okay. That's it, right? So, public meeting is over, and we move on to approving AB 1200. Do you have more to say about that, Jim?
Staff recommends approval by the board as formalized in the process, and then we submit it to the county.
Yeah, move approval.
Great. It looked like Jeremy, were you going to ask a question? I thought you were turning on the light. So we've got a motion, Claudia, second by Deb. All in favor?
Aye.
Oppose? Abstain?
Thank you.
Excellent. And now we're on to 8.3.8.
Again, President Thompson, thank you. This goes hand in hand with the AB 1200 disclosure. This shows the actual article that will be amended and input into the actual agreement, which shows the increase that was agreed to and then is placed in the actual agreement itself.
Questions from the board? Comments from the public? Do we have a motion?
I shall move.
I'll second.
Okay, Sheila and Claudia, all in favor?
Aye.
Oppose? Abstain?
Thank you.
Passes. And 8.3.9, five-year developer fee report.
That's me. Tonight's my night.
Taking a stand.
The room is empty. this is a follow-up to our meeting we also held in December, where annually we must report where the expenses are for the use of the developer fee fund, which is Fund 25, but it's also a requirement from the state that we do a rolling five-year report that shows what the expenses were, where they are lined up within the object codes, and that's what this report does. It's a compilation of the previous 5 years, ending with the fiscal year 14-15, that we then present and make available to show the expenses of the fund, Fund 25, that goes directly into those type of projects that have been disclosed. Thank you.
Questions from the board?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Patty.
Jim, can you help me to understand when I read the developer fee table why the beginning balance for the fiscal year consistently from 2010-11 to 14-15 starts in the negative?
That would
only
be
only in the elementary.
Elementary side. When I was talking to Ms. Lacey prior to her resignation, is what the district has done over the Santa Cruz City Schools District has used Fund 25 to fund projects over both sides, elementary and secondary. So in this case, Fund 25 has been used to fund more projects than actual developer fees brought in on the elementary side. But in using it as one fund, we'd be able to get all the projects done that would fall under this legislation of that piece.
So am I to understand that funds collected going into the general, more have been collected from the secondary use than the elementary, so it has been supplemented.
In this particular case, you would say the secondary district has assisted the elementary side to meet all of the projects that would fall within the developer fee. The cost of the projects has exceeded, if the revenue were just from the elementary side, it would exceed what the elementary district has pulled in for developer fees. Okay. But because we combined them, we're able to do that piece of it. And we still use this mainly, for example, the leasing of portable classrooms, or any type of classroom physical expense that comes from the fact that the number of students in the classroom. So, yes.
And does it appear that it will continue that way for the 15-16 year?
I would probably say that the majority of our portable leases currently do come on the elementary sites versus the secondary sites. So we will continue to look at the budget and monitor overall. Again, they'll go in conjunction with our long-range facility master plan and the long-term expense of what we do with the campuses. And so this particular case, the positive piece were Santa Cruz City Schools. So we have the one fund 25 that offsets all the project needs within this area. And we met the long-term piece of spending down the funds. For example, this fund will also, this is where we're pulling in the long-range facility master plan fee that you approved last year, will come directly from this fund that benefits both sides of the house, as far as I'm for lack of a better term.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Comments from our dedicated public?
Okay,
talk amongst yourselves. Anything else from the board? Any other comments? No, so the recommendation is to accept the 5-year developer fee. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Deb and Sheila, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstains? And we will
Thank you.
Close the meeting and reconvene in closed session. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Very good.
You got it. Very good. Bravo. Mm-hmm.
One down, 7 billion.
Yeah, don't you start with me.
Just glad it's not me.
I have a package for you, and I keep forgetting to bring it.
I used to like doing it, but I'm like, no, not anymore. By halfway through, I'm like,
Did you feel muscle?
Did I what?
Feel muscle?
I didn't because I'm still like, you're so busy.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Okay. But I did write down all these questions of like,
oh, I need you to know something.